Starting back, as you know, we were thrown off the air yesterday. It's just monkey wrenches in the works, and they've worked it out, so we are back with each other, and a great thing too. That's the late Hugh Masekela on vocals and trumpet and cornet with Chileshi. It's from his 1998 album, Black to the Future. And it's an interesting reason today. This is how life works. Because Hugh Ramopolo Masekela, dubbed the father of South African jazz, died on Tuesday, January the 23rd, after a long battle with prostate cancer. He was 78 years old. Also on Tuesday, as you know, the Reverend Dr. Wyatt T. Walker, Dr. Martin Luther King's chief strategist during the tumultuous years of the civil rights struggle, also died on that day at the age of 88. And here we have two people. This is how I look at life. It's so interesting how things work out. These two men are so connected. And they were both, in their own ways, involved in struggle. Hugh Masekela in South Africa, actually driving through his music and his song, driving a movement, giving people through their culture, their shared culture, the courage to persist. He never backed down from criticizing the apartheid regime, and he was as committed as every activist in South Africa to breaking the yoke of apartheid. And on this end of the world, there's Wyatt T. Walker, who was at a stage in life where he could just have walked away and said, you know, I'm a young man coming into the fullness of the years I've prepared to be a shepherd of the flock. I could live nicely as a prince of a church at Canaan Baptist Church in Harlem. But that's not what he decided he would do. The record shows a long, protracted engagement as an activist, but also as a strategist in this magnificent struggle. And here we are, remembering them both on this day. And what I ask that we remember more than anything else is, you know, not for the sake of glory or anything like that. I don't think they would want that. But we should, for ourselves, draw lessons from them, because we've had so many examples besides Masekela and Y.T. Walker. We have had repeated lessons and templates as so-called activists as to what we are called to do. It's not about self-glory, and it's not about the wonderful accolades that people will give after they're dead. It's about also taking instruction by the way they chose to live their lives in service to others. What a magnificent legacy. So on this day, as we engage in our customary Free Your Mind Friday discussions, let's also keep in mind that we have been left templates. We have been given example after example of what people chose to do with their lives so that masses of people could benefit from. Okay? You know, I always ask us to ask ourselves, what do we mean to do with our lives if we call ourselves progressives and activists? Well, here, yet another set of examples of people who did their work. Not for glory, not for recompense, not for a place in the history books. They did what was natural to do, because they were dedicated to service. So in that spirit, we proceed with our program today, and we thank Hugh Masekela, we thank Dr. Y.T. Walker for being exemplars of how true and committed activists lived their lives. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Philip from New York, you're on the air.
Can I be heard?
Yes.
Hi, Utrice. Thank you for taking my call. And as many of your callers do, I'd like to thank the PRN family.
Thank you.
I don't know if I'm part of the family, but I've been listening to you for a few years.
Then and, you're part of the family.
I appreciate that. the reason for my, and this is the Friday component, so really you open it up to anything that is of issue or concern to us, and I'm having misgivings, and I wanted to sort of gain clarification if it was possible. I've been listening to your program. As a matter of fact, I was one of the listeners who was shocked a few years ago when you disappeared from the air, and so ecstatic when you came back, and I'm happy that your health is better and that you're hanging in and you're doing the work that you do. But Utrice, I've been listening to your dialogue with Charles Ortel for a few years, the last couple years anyway, and I'm having a little difficulty because there was a program that you did back in November, I think it was the 9th of November, that I'm still looking for. And I know that there was some commentary towards the end of that program about the Tawana Brawley case that I really want to get a chance to hear. But I've checked it repeatedly, and I'm not ever seeing it, so I guess it's never going to be there. The purpose for this call, Charles Ortel, in his effort directed at the Clintons, I want to be on record that I've never been a fan of Bill or Hillary. I've not been a fan of theirs because Bill's efforts in the death penalty case involving Ricky Rector has always bothered me. I didn't see him as a decent man because of that particular issue. And I don't think I take any comfort in Hillary either. But I'm at an age where, you know, I've been through many presidents that I don't care for. I lived through Reagan as a college student. I lived through Bush 1, Bush 2. And it offended me that Clinton referred to himself as the first black president. He didn't suffer like we did, so I don't think you get to call yourself that if you haven't walked in our shoes. But Charles Ertel, in his efforts towards the Clintons, is a concern for me only because he's an avowed Republican. And he has said some things about the man who sits in the Oval Office today that give me pause. I don't consider Bill Clinton or Hillary to be necessarily good people, but I don't consider Trump to be a very good person either. And I listen to Charles talk, and I listen to what he's doing, and it occurred to me that I don't really care about Hillary and Bill. And I'm sort of frustrated with some of my Haitian friends who voted for Trump because they didn't see the big picture. Many of us here in this country have voted for Democrats, Republicans for generations. And quite often we're stuck in the Republican Party because that's where our great-grandparents were. We're stuck in the Democratic Party because that's where we found some relief for the suffering we've been through. At the end of the day, I realized that both of those parties work together to benefit people other than me and people like me. But Charles Ertel has this thing about the Clintons that drives me crazy. Yeah, they probably should spend some jail time, but Clinton is no worse than Trump. And when a man who is in favor of a Trump administration begins talking about the Clintons, it just colors things for me. And so I've listened to him. I listened as recently as yesterday. And personally, I have to take Alka-Seltzer after I hear Charles talk to you because he frustrates me. He frustrates me. But at the same time, you've done such tremendous service giving us access to that information. And so I'm sort of in this quandary. I'm listening to him. I have the feelings I've had about the Clintons for years, and I'm dealing with the reality of a Trump administration while he's going back and bringing up things from 12 and 16 years ago. And I'm like, well, gee, it's no different now. But I wanted to ask you, because he is a tremendous researcher. I'm a firm believer in reparations personally, and I've never found anyone who can sort of peel the onion for information like that. And if, when he's through bashing the Clintons, Charles might have an interest in assisting us with the information that could assist us toward the reparations movement, maybe getting in touch with Encobra and some other people. I think I can develop an affinity for him. But as it stands, he drives me crazy. But anyway,
a couple of things. Let me start at the beginning. I thank you for the question. One is that Charles is not a Republican.
Okay.
He's not.
You fooled me.
He's, in a sense, I would say he's like me in a sense, because I dropped out of the political charlatan type things that are going on. I'm no part of that. Haven't been for more than 20 years. I'm not under any illusions that one party is better than the other. They're both undesirable, and I choose not to be part of that. It could come to a point where there would be reason for me to re-enter as some kind of a participant, although I think it's a cruel joke. We are not part of a democratic process at all. So I preferred not to pretend, and I stopped voting more than 20 years ago. He's not a Republican. And just so you know, he also did not vote for Donald Trump. What consumes me and consumes him is the level of criminality going on here. And for me, it has a special edge to it. The Clintons surpass all in both the scope and in the level of devastation they have enabled for private gain using the black world. That's my number one peeve.
I agree.
Everything that they have done purposefully to derive a profit, they've gone into the black world and turned it upside down, exploited it beyond any imagination. And I'm not just talking billions of dollars. This is what we talk about here. It's not just billions of dollars. These people have also engaged Hillary, particularly when she was Secretary of State, Bill Clinton when he was president, creating the...
Hello?
And Obama as well, in this regard, the assassination of black leaders in the black world. The damage they have done in the black world is enormous. And you take this one issue of AIDS, and they founded this bogus operation saying that they helping to help people suffering with HIV/AIDS.
Yes.
And
yes.
Engaging with this renegade, crooked pharmaceutical company that they resuscitated to produce bogus drugs. We have no idea still of the genocidal effect. They've gotten away with crimes against humanity that would numb the mind.
I agree. And I will
and
forever,
that,
I will
that
forever hold
one
against
on my
her
list.
What she did
my
to
list
Walmart.
Is, my list is, we cannot allow them to get away with this because it's a broad network, including President Obama, and we have to expose it.
I agree. I
could not ask for a more competent analyst and researcher than Charles Ortel.
Well,
only
is
now.
Complete, no doubt about that.
Only now, I mean, because he's not talking off the top of his head.
Right.
When this man said in 2007, General Electric was ripping off investors by overinflating the stock, people were saying, hey, you're crazy. What are they saying now, all these years later?
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's to me, I would work with an arch conservative. I would work with an ultra right winger if we agree.
One day I'm going to grow up to be as mature as you, you treat one day.
No, I will work with a racist.
Here again, it's maturity with me.
We have business to do. I would do it.
Okay. I have one other point I'd like to make. Actually, this is something more on a personal tip, because I've been listening to you, and one of the things that you've done is expose us to the thought, the conceptions of Brother Alton Maddox. And I'm going to appeal to you and to him. I read something that he wrote a few days ago. You've probably seen it.
Yes.
You two are very, very important to us. And I don't know what the deal is. I don't care, because your importance is beyond that. And so I'm hopeful that you and Alton will talk, and that you will continue to bring him, and he will continue to hold you up. I really, really want that. And when it all
I
comes
want to
down,
state for the record, there is nothing that Alton Maddox could say or do to make me have an entirely different opinion of him. I have the highest respect and regard for him.
It's why I love you, stranger. It's why I love you. And I'm impressed with that. And if there is a jail cell that can fit the Clintons and Obama and Trump, that would be wonderful. Put them all in there. And thanks for taking my call, Eugene.
I would team up with a gangster if we could get this thing done. I see beyond these things. I understand only that the common thing we should share is the quest for truth. And when this level of crime is committed and committed against my community, my people, I see beyond that. I'm interested in, let's get to the nitty gritty. And by the way, just so you know,
I agree.
Many, many governments around the world are just catching on, and they are in the fight to nail these crooks.
Well, his research is phenomenal, and it sort of helps to have you put a tone on it. So I will continue to listen to Charles Ortel and hope that the jail cell is big enough.
You have to hold your nose a little bit, huh?
Thank you, Eutrice. Thanks for taking my call. You have
a
wonderful day.
Big picture. Thank you so much. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing good. Two things. Number one, I had the opportunity to see Hugh Master Keller in concert, and other than Fela, he was probably one of my favorite African musicians, and I think he was also married to Makeba, right?
Yes, Mary Makeba.
Yeah. I enjoy her and, some of the other Africans also. So may he rest in peace. And
I want to ask you, have you ever really connected Masekela to the anti-apartheid movement? In fact, his song, which became an anthem of Bring Him Back Home, was like Stevie Wonder's anthem for getting Martin Luther King Day established. It became an anthem for the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. Are you aware of his involvement in that movement?
Yeah, that's how I became acquainted with him. I think it was back in the, 80s when I was part of a group called ANISA. With Sister Soldier and some others. That's how I got to recognize who he was, and then I saw him in concert, with Fela, and, Fela wasn't really too much in regards to the protests in South Africa, but he was definitely in Nigeria, his home country. So that's how I became acquainted through my studies of, those African musicians who, use their oppression as a symbol of their music chip. So, yeah, I'm definitely clear of who he was and what he represented. You know what I mean? That's why I said, give him much due respect and praise for, what he did, Now, also, I had the opportunity to meet Y.T. Walker, And he was, I must say, as I refer to him as pork chop chicken eating preachers, one of those who I could definitely, deal with and say that he did a great thing, like probably my reverend hero, Brother Jones out there in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? William Augustus Jones were two of the most powerful preachers that I ever had the opportunity to orate a sermon. I mean, I shouldn't say this, but I have to say it. I heard Reverend Jones speak one time, and it brought me to tears in the manner in which not only he delivered the sermon, what he was talking about, but just the matter how he made it so perfectly clear to what our oppression was, and how he just weaved it all in to what his belief in God was. And you know, I'm not a Christian or anything like that. I'm to be honest with you, I'm anti-religion. But the man definitely brought me to tears, and you know, he made me feel a certain way. And Wyatt T. Walker, you know, didn't do that, but you know, I had great deal of respect for him and the way and the manner in which he treated people, you know, especially the elderly in his church, and what he tried to do to give them some semblance of a decent life during the period of time where he built his old folks home and, you know, and things of that nature in the community. Because I think he was the first one who went into that type of direction of development, you know, that some of the other churches have gone into. And then as far as a person, he was a nice guy.
Very nice man. But resolute and very clear about who the enemy was and how they were to build this movement, because this was the skill that he brought to Martin. Because
you know,
King
of,
is
a lot
great.
Of people...
He needed an organizer. He needed an organizer. And that was Wyatt T. Walker's strength, to get into the communities, to organize people, to convey to people what this struggle was all about and the benefits it would yield when people become involved together. That was a key strength, which is why Martin Luther King selected him and asked him to come aboard with this movement that they were trying to get off the ground. So I'm glad that you had the experience and the expertise of exposure to Master Killer and Y.T. Walker. Thanks for calling in today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. How are you doing?
Yes, good afternoon, Yatrice. I think it was last week. I get to the point. You asked a question. You posed the question that what would you say if someone, an alien person, came down and you wanted to and asked you about this place called the United States of America, and what would you say? What's going on here? And what would you tell them? And as I remember it, no one answered your question, and I wasn't able to get on at that time. So I'd like to deal with that right now.
Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. Now, if an alien came down, I'd explain to that alien that we live in a place called the United States of America that is controlled by a small group of people. We call them oligarchs and plutocrats. And they have a very specific mission. There's one mission that they have, and that's to enrich themselves at the expense of the masses of people, the 99% that live in the country, and the environment. They are not interested in protecting or being stewards of the environment. They're involved in doing anything they can that will make a profit for themselves. In other words, their mission statement is to enrich themselves at the expense of everyone else. So if you have a system like that, you have to trick the people. So they have a very good way of doing it. They project the idea that they have democracy here. And when people do not, they, ones who are at the top, control who the candidates are for the most part. Fool the people into thinking that they're voting and making the decisions when the people at the top are providing the people who are going to run. They have it divided into two parts of a uniparty or a duopoly that they control, and they trick most of the people most of the time. However, some people have decided that it's all phony, so you have a lot of people who don't participate in the voting. So the point is that we're living in a place where there's a phone democracy, where the major tool in the toolbox of those ruling class people that control the country is divide and conquer. By that I mean they divide by gender, male against female, by so-called race, different races against each other, by ethnicity, they divide people up by that. They divide people by age, young against old and old against young, and divide the various states, and they have 50 of them, against each other, where they make them compete against each other, for example, for capitalist business. And it's divide and conquer on steroids. So that's what I would explain to an alien if that alien came down, and I'm responding to your question.
With this analysis, I would like to ask a follow-up question, and that is, why do you put up with it?
Well, I think most, personally, I resist it every way that I can by the things I do and things I say. But most people, I would think, the majority of the people are pretty well pacified.
Oh.
You know, people are pacified. They say things, one common thing is you hear people saying all the time, oh, you can't fight City Hall, you see. So people have just given up, number one. And the other part is this, that most people do not understand the system. Yeah, you have very weak information that we would put in the category of system analysis. Most people don't understand the system, and you're not going to learn it in the ruling class of schools. You're not going to get it out of his newspaper or other media or television or radio. And so most people are completely dumbfounded when it comes to analyzing the system they live in. So that comes up with the statement that people often make, that people vote against their own interests and whatnot, which is true. And so it's very difficult for that one group, one out of 1,000 people control so many, and that person is able to do that because it bamboozles people, and people have no idea of really doing a system analysis and deciding what is going on. So the mission is being accomplished. It's getting worse and worse, and the mission is to enrich that group at the expense of everyone else, and that's happening more and more and more. They're getting more successful.
Well, you know, I asked you the question because it's, you know, one that we get faced with all the time.
Yes.
People say, well, if you don't like it, why are you here? The fact is, we have to develop an entirely different attitude and response to that question, which is, I'm here. I'm entitled to be here. And it involves now, the work involves the way that people would interpret it as being system done, worrying more, credible responses to that system that have to do with our survival. Do you agree or disagree?
I think that I agree with you, and I agree that our survival is at stake. People are getting poorer and poorer, and we've got to do something. And I think that people have to understand the part of this. The game is that if the ruling class sees there's any danger in people rebelling against their current mission, their mission is to enrich themselves, they throw some bones, like Franklin Delano Roosevelt threw in the threw the bone of the Social Security and some other things, the Work Progress Administration, and as you go along, you throw a bone when necessary to calm the masses down. So people have to understand that this is going on. And when you feel that you can take that bone back, you go and get that bone. And that's what they're trying to do now. They're going to go for the Social Security, and they're going to go for the other social benefits that people might like. But when they feel they can take these things back and enrich themselves more, that's what they're going to do. So I say that people have to get educated to the point where they are good at system analysis. And I know you've talked about that many times, but most people are just in the dark when it comes to system analysis.
And we have to develop a consciousness that we have systems, and we must continue to develop more systems, but that serve our needs. The curious thing about the position we're in is not only that this system is doing us in, it even provides the antidote that they want us to implement. We give you a system, and then we both pretend that you're fighting us. But no, we have to get our own. We have to devise our own. And we have to be brave enough to just simply say, we understand you. We know you well. You know, it was remarkable today reading the news that in France today, do you know what happened in France today, David? There was a major national crisis.
Yes.
Over Nutella. Nutella is a kind of paste that combines hazelnuts with chocolate. It happens to be a very popular thing that the French and the British and many Europeans, they like it.
Mm-hmm.
And they toast and they rejoice in a little piece of paradise when they are eating a piece of toast with Nutella. Well, a national grocery chain decided that it would give a 70% discount on Nutella, and they had a national riot on their hands. Now, the story behind this is that when people see their interests being trampled on, and in this case, it was Nutella. We got to get all the Nutella that we can get. They will move. Yeah. They will move in their interest. But we haven't figured out how to get people so excited about moving in their interests.
Yes.
So maybe it's we got to start passing out jars of Nutella.
Right. You got it. People just don't get it.
They don't get it.
Most people don't get it. And, you know, so I was just fascinated with your question, and I was so disappointed because I couldn't get on that day and no one answered that. So,
well, you made up for it today, that's for sure. Thanks so much for calling in. Joel from New Rochelle, you're on the air.
Good day. You know I love your work.
You love what?
I love your work.
Oh, thank you. I thought you were talking about a different jar of something. Thank you so much.
I'm calling because last time I was at the very last moment of the hour, and in my nervousness, I forgot some of the things I wanted to say. The difficulty that I think we're up against is belief versus fact. And the longer we study what's already been done and failed, the longer we start to realize that You Can't Fight City Hall was written by somebody in City Hall, and you never heard anybody who was rich say, money isn't everything. So I really am a information hound. I have a 40-terabyte offline library, and I implore people to study what's already happened and listen to shortwave, listen to other viewpoints, because if you disagree with somebody, that doesn't really make them wrong. It just means you don't see their point, and it's not fair to disqualify people on the basis of belief.
Okay, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. So far, I agree with everything.
I don't know what else to say except...
Do you consider yourself an activist?
I do. I make a difference. I try to help people understand the difficulty they face in making a decision, and then I offer them options because, like a child, when you offer them, which socks do you want to wear today, the blue ones or the green ones, that's an exercise in giving them the muscles and their brain to decide effectively what they want. And learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we have made any inroads at all? I wouldn't say at all. Do you think we have made enough significant inroads into this business of established order?
I think that it's an ongoing struggle. It always has been. And for an example, if you never heard of a town called Carbonara in Italy, there was a place that's no longer on the map. About 150 years ago, the commoners buried the aristocracy. And these are examples that are long forgotten, and they have to be. It's an ongoing struggle. It's like cleaning your kitchen. You have to do it conscientiously and with a little bit of knowledge and pay attention to what's been discovered since you decided to do so.
Mm-hmm.
It's continuous.
Thank you so much, Joel, for your contribution today. Delighted that you called in. Well, from Rosedale, New York, Jose, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor. And as always, ancestral blessings be upon you. Always.
Thank you so much. You know, you have that thing twisted. It's actually the callers are my professor. And you do a lot to educate us all by just sharing your ideas and coursing through the knowledge that you're sharing with us today. So what are you talking about today?
Thank you for being so kind. Well, I haven't been in classes for a while, and I don't know if you have touched on it, but I would like to bring it up anyway. Recently, there has been an election in this colony, former colony of the United States, Liberia. And we now have a new president. I have a couple of things I just want to throw to you, and then listen to your response. Right? I'd like to get your take and that the whole Liberia situation, what is where we are now with Liberia. Also, I'd like for you to give me a take on this coup that is not supposed to be a coup in Zimbabwe, because I have friends who are trying to tell me not to believe my lying eyes, and that was not a coup. And also, I would like for you to touch a little, if possible, on what is happening, has been happening to our people in South Africa with Zuma, the president of South Africa, and now Ramaphosa, who is making his move to which is a multi-billionaire who has been involved in the liberation struggle with ANC in South Africa. And these fellows wind up being millionaires and billionaires, and they are living the good life, while very little has changed in the condition of the African people in South Africa. And the apartheid regime seems to be flourishing with its legitimacy now, and they've been emboldened, and I don't know, the land issue and so forth, it has not been addressed. The invaders still control the land of Africa, African people's land. And so all these issues, I don't know if you could give me a quick take on your
well, tell me what you make of the. Let's start at the top of the list that you presented today. What is your take about what is going on in Liberia?
Well, to me, Liberia is at a crossroads now. They said this. We have a president now that is of the indigenous group of people, the America Liberians, who has been in charge and been running things for the longest at the behest of their American masters, and I have hopes that this young man would be different from the those that has been leading Liberia. And I want to, as that great philosopher once said, Jesse Jackson, keep hope alive, and that things will change for the better. And I, as an African from the Caribbean, Jamaica to be exact, I want to be able to get involved with some of the forces that are working to get involved in trying to assist in whatever way we can to see that experiment succeed.
Well, I think one of the things that we have to always look at when we discuss any African nation is the issue of regionalism. There is going to be no progress unless Africa takes a regional or continental view, a much broader view than it is encouraged to do now. So you have, as in the case of Liberia, you have the extenuating issue of the degree to which the Americo-Liberians basically transferred U.S. imperialism to Liberia. You have the consequence of racism. People who are light-skinned, people who are dark-skinned, people who have, quote, good hair, and people who don't have good hair. And you can't miss it because it is intertwined with everything.
Yes.
You take a country like Liberia, and it borders on Sierra Leone, and you have other countries that are equally, if not more so, unstable, destabilized by foreign interference. The best safety that could be assured in any African country, in my view, is that it begins to take a look at what Gaddafi was arguing for. And that was a more holistic view toward development. Because so many of these nations fall into the trap that they are new and independent, the case being made in Zimbabwe at the moment.
Yes.
You know, you have people telling us it's a new Zimbabwe and so forth. But is it? The first thing the new president did was to make a move to return the land to white settlers.
Yes.
Who obtained much of their land illegally. So when you see these kinds of moves, you say, oh, geez, you know, they haven't really moved beyond their conditioned response. They're still beholden to unseen hands and interests, and mm-hmm. the people are going to suffer. Inevitably, it will create an internal problem. Mm-hmm. All of these countries that we're looking at have the same kind of profile, even when, as in South Africa, there is a new regime. But as you pointed out, is it just accidental that the people who are ruling this country right now, who should have had an entirely different sensibility, an entirely different orientation, mm-hmm. are nonetheless mimicking the same exploitation that they experienced under apartheid?
Yeah.
So what is the progress supposed to be? You could sit right now and predict in another 5-10 years where the country's heading.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most robust economies on the continent. So have we learned anything?
No.
Have we are people seeing the light at all?
No.
That leadership must account for the sacrifices that were made in order to bring these countries into a state of independence or even quasi-independence, but it requires the entire continent
mm-hmm.
assessing where it is and moving in as a collective. To me, that's the only way to go, because China owns a little piece, and then, you know, the United States owns a little piece, and Israel owns some here, and all the other countries that have had a long history of invading and exploiting have not moved.
Yes.
They're still there. The African leadership has to do more. The Organization of African Unity has to do more. Because while these things are unresolved,
yes,
we see the super militarization of the entire continent.
Mm-hmm.
We just saw the other day the United States has not yet accounted for what the military expansion, what is the extent of military expansion in all of Africa.
Yes.
So there are so many things that are wrong, in the sense that you're marveled that they still continue to be wrong despite the long experience that African states have had with foreign intervention and exploitation and the fomenting of unstable economies and unstable political situations that inevitably lead to war
mm-hmm.
and to famine and to mass migrations of people and all the social ills that we keep seeing over and over and over and over again. The hope was that when Kenyatta and the senior guys had come along in the fullness of self-determination, that the hope they had for Africa would have prevailed
yeah.
long enough to turn things around, but that hasn't turned out to be the case.
No.
So is there, in your view...
Can I ask you real quick?
Yeah, sure.
During the days of, apartheid, as if it ever went anywhere, The liberation group had a method, had a technique that they used on the traitors that betrayed our people. The other thing they used, they call the necklace. Do you think
yes.
that would be more effective or the
no.
Nutella? The
no.
Nutella approach or the necklace approach?
Well, the necklace approach is just pure violence, and it is mindless because people aren't thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They're not thinking when they reach that stage of putting a tire around somebody's neck and setting it afire.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrorism.
Yes.
That is not helpful to getting people to understand how you create and do nation building. That it does not contribute to any basic understanding. If anything, it creates more war. It creates more difference. It creates more anger and rancor. And you have a now protracted, you added yet another element to the impediments to progress, which is that you have groups fighting each other, just like, you know, you have some countries where the people in the North rule, and then they give the people in the South a chance. This is not the way to work. Mm-hmm. And you have the compounding effect of tribalism, a compounding effect of the impact, the ongoing impact of foreign nations in the internal affairs. It's very, very complicated. It's not helped by mindless violence like that. Well, that just means that we're out of time. Thank you so much for calling, all of you. As this. Nini,